Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during November. Now that we're back to standard time, darkness comes soon. The bad news is that daylight is likely over by the time you get home from work. But the good news, at least for us stargazers, is that we can grab a quick look at the evening stars before supper time. November starts out with moon-free evening skies. That's because the moon was full on October 29th, and it's rising hours after sunset. Likewise, bright planets are nowhere to be seen in the early evening, unless you have a completely unobstructed view toward west and the sky is really clear. In that case, look 30 to 45 minutes after sunset, and you might catch a glimpse of Mars low in the southwest. Technically, Mercury is in that neighborhood too, but it's lower down in the twilight glare, and honestly, not worth trying to find. So let's ignore the planets for a bit and get our celestial bearings as darkness falls. Look high up in the west, and you'll see our old friends, the three bright stars of the summer triangle. Vega is the brightest of these, and the one closest to the horizon. Deneb is above it by the width of two or three fists at arm's length, and Altair is farther off to Vega's left. I suppose summer triangle is something of a misnomer because you'll be able to see this striking trio well into December. Now turn to your left to face south. The only decently bright star in this part of the sky is Fomalhaut. Depending on your latitude, it's above the horizon by two or three fists. This lonely beacon is sometimes called the autumn star. It's part of the dim constellation known as Piscis Austrinus, the southern fish. Around mid-November, look for Fomalhaut at 7 p.m. and note what's below it along your horizon. That direction is due south. Since Fomalhaut is towards south, if you do an about-face and look due north, you'll find Polaris, the north star, roughly halfway from the horizon to overhead. Don't expect to be dazzled by Polaris. It's only half as bright as Fomalhaut. About three-fifths to the upper right of Polaris, you'll see a group of five medium-bright stars crudely shaped like a three, or maybe a broad W tipped up on its left corner. This is the constellation Cassiopeia, who is a queen in Greek mythology. You might imagine these stars outlining the chair or throne that she's sitting on, rather than the queen herself. Ancient poets say that Cassiopeia was the queen of either Ethiopia or Joppa, the city that is now Jaffa in Israel. In any case, she was both beautiful and boastful. So, to punish the queen's arrogance, Poseidon, lord of the sea, unleashed a flood and sent the sea monster Cetus to ravage her land. The only way to stop Cetus was to chain the royal couple's daughter, Andromeda, to a rock so that the monster could devour her. Luckily, the hero Perseus was on his way home from having killed Medusa. He swoops in to save Andromeda, then claims her in marriage. Meanwhile, Cassiopeia's misdeeds landed her up in the sky, doomed to hang upside down half the time and clinging to her throne so she doesn't fall off. All these mythological players are in the same part of the sky. For example, you can find the splash of medium-bright stars marking Perseus by starting at the three of Cassiopeia and then looking two or three fists lower down. To the queen's right, also by about two fists, is Andromeda. Go a little farther to the right, and closer to overhead, to spot the great square of the constellation Pegasus, the winged horse. In some tellings of Andromeda's rescue, Perseus is riding Pegasus. The dim stars of Cetus, the sea monster, are three or four fists below the great square. Now, to see a bright planet, you'll have to wait until Jupiter climbs over the eastern horizon, which occurs about 2 hours after the sun slips from sight in early November. But Jupiter rises just after sunset by month's end. Don't be fooled by the bright star Capella, which rises first but farther to the left in the northeast. Once Jupiter is up, you'll see that it's much, much brighter than Capella. Honestly, right now most of the planetary action is taking place in the pre-dawn sky before the sun rises. If you can get outside by 5:30 or 6 a.m., you'll find Jupiter high in the southwest, entangled in the horns of Taurus the bull, with Orion and his hunting dogs to their left. Over in the east, brilliant Venus is unmistakable. It rises about 3 hours before the sun in early November, and a bit closer to sunrise by month's end. Nearby is the bright star Spica, But what I want you to watch for is the steady rise of the planet Saturn coming up from the twilight glare. The gap between these two planets gradually shrinks, and on the morning of November 26th, they'll be separated by less than 1 degree, so close together that you'll be able to cover them both up with your fingertip. November is also the month of the Leonid meteor shower, so called because the streaks of these shooting stars appear to radiate from the constellation Leo. Normally, this is a pretty modest display, with only 20 meteors or so visible per hour under the best of conditions. For this year's peak, before dawn on the 17th, moonlight won't be a problem. My final sky tip involves something that hasn't happened for 2.5 years, a total eclipse of the sun. That takes place on November 13th. Unfortunately, to see it, you'll have to be bobbing on a boat somewhere in the South Pacific or standing at the very northeastern tip of Australia. Too bad. If you want more sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Until next month, I wish you clear skies.